Are you listening? Damn.
On this episode of the Endurance Hour podcast, how to train around an abnormal work schedule, whether it's professional or personal. The pros and cons of replacing one endurance activity with a non-triathlon-related activity. Training in the aero position. What is a good time to upgrade from your road bike to a tri bike, and should you? And finally, is swimming 100% form? The Endurance Hour podcast starts right now. Before we officially begin, just want to say congratulations to the Endurance Hour. We're patting ourselves on the back. It's 10 years this month that we started the podcast in 2012. It's been a long journey of starts and stops. As you can tell, obviously, we're continuing. So, Wendy, happy 10-year birthday. We're both 10 years old today, or this month, for the Endurance Hour podcast.
Right. I think that's a big deal. I think when you started this podcast, the podcasting wasn't really a thing. You know, it's definitely, podcasting has exploded, I think, in the last 3 or 4 years, you know, as far as like a platform for us, at least for an endurance coach like myself, and coaching businesses. But back when you started it, just like triathlon always starts small and it continues to grow. I think you started it and it's just definitely continued to grow. And the way we've, what we've done on the podcast and the length of the podcast and just kind of how we developed it over the years has changed. And I think it's great that it's still going on.
Yeah, it certainly has evolved. And when I did it, it was more of a way as a platform for the Timex multisport team, which I had just been on, was just entered onto the team. It's like, hey, this is gonna be a great platform to share our products, introduce other people to our athletes. And I think it was one of the early adopters of multisport or endurance podcasting platforms. But, you know, podcasting was really getting some momentum. And I was like, oh, let's jump into this. And then I've had my momentum stop and go throughout the years for a number of reasons. But I'm glad that we're still going. And now we can give back in many different ways, kind of like with these Q&As we have here and all the different training plans that we offer. And our first question comes from Keith, who's a nurse, and he signed up and bought our beginner Olympic training plan. But he also, as a nurse, he works, you know, these 12-hour shifts. And so his question was, you know, how do I go about working around some of these plans and these workouts that you have with such an abnormal schedule of mine? What do you tell someone who's, you know, dealing with juggling odd times for work?
Yeah. And I think everyone, no matter what their schedule is, work schedule, it's best to try to fit the training plan again around your work and family schedule. Plan your work, plan your family obligations and other priorities, and then try to fit training around that schedule. And again, that's one of my strengths as a personal coach, is I tell people, I'm going to make time in your schedule to fit it in, because I can usually see those gaps once we talk about what their day-to-day looks like. In Keith's situation, he's a nurse. He works 3 p.m. to 3 a.m., which is, I think, a really tough schedule, because, you know, you're getting home. Let's say he gets home by 4. Most people like myself are starting to wake up between, you know, about 5 o'clock in the morning, and he's just starting to sleep. Or maybe he's going to the gym or going to train after work, and then he sleeps. Because if you think about it, a typical 9-to-5 job, a lot of people will work their typical 9-to-5 job, come home and maybe train and then go to sleep. So in his case, I would offer that advice, is try to, you know, go do your work schedule 3-to-3, get off work, get your training session in, and or go to sleep. And then right before you go to work, like I would, I'm going to wake up at 5 a.m. before I go to work and go train. He's going to wake up at like 1 p.m., go train, and then go to work. So there's lots of ways to see how your body adapts best around that type of schedule. And then I also know a nursing schedule is usually 3 12-hour shifts, and then you have, you know, maybe 4 days off a week. So if you have a typical, you know, let's say you work Monday, Tuesday, and then you have Wednesday off, and then you work Thursday, and then you maybe have Friday, Saturday, Sunday off, then you plan your longer days, obviously, on those days that you have off. It may or may not be the weekend. And then plan either a day off or plan a shorter session on the day you have that back-to-back, possibly 12-hour shift. So it's definitely something that it always depends on the athlete. and what else they have going on in life. So, you know, in his case, it's just finding out, is he a morning person? Is he an afternoon person? Just like everyone else. Mm-hmm. And it's okay. You know, you have this training plan, you have this 12-week template of workouts. It's okay to move them around. If you have a Training Peaks premium account, then you're able to move the workouts around, where if you can avoid it, you know, swimming 3 days in a row or biking 3 days in a row or running 3 days in a row. I always like to say the general rule of thumb for me, for myself and when I'm coaching an athlete, is to try not to go more than 2 days between sports. So if you happen to put a bike ride in on a Monday, try to bike again on Thursday. If you run on Wednesday, try to run again by Saturday. Mm-hmm. You know, that's a way to kind of have in your mind how to juggle the schedule. And then I also want to note, obviously, when it comes to swimming, you have to schedule swim time. You have to schedule your time around the pool time. If you can only bike outside, well, then you have to schedule your biking time based on the weather as well. Whereas running, you tend to, if you have the proper outdoor running clothes, you can run anywhere, anytime with any clothing that you have. And so, you know, you're kind of juggling more than your schedule. You're juggling the weather schedule and the pool schedule.
Right. And that's why it's so extra important to have sometimes a personalized coach who can see your schedule and can rearrange. So if you hire someone on it, you know, not just the plan, but also, hey, maybe I can get somebody for a small fee to look over my shoulder and help me organize this, who has experience, of course, mm-hmm. someone like Wendy, who can be your personal coach in addition to just setting up the plan. So extra helpful to have that, looking into that. Now Keith started the Beginner Olympic, which is starting right now for him, and he's looking at the plan. And within the plan, there's links to other resource material like the strength training and demonstrations on how to do some of these exercises and why you're doing them to help with the training. So you followed up with him about the feedback on the training workouts, the strength stuff.
Yeah. So he asked me specifically about videos that go along with the movements. And so within the plan, I have kind of a sample workout, a warm up, a preset, a main set, a cool down, and I listed various exercises. And then I also have a video in that where I go through the phases of strength training. Phase one, anatomical adaptation, strength and mobility, core. The most important thing about any strength program, whether you're beginner or advanced, is movement execution. So I suggested he might want to meet with a professional personal trainer or someone to help him with form and make sure he's doing the movements correctly. Always start light and always kind of, you know, start with one set, see how you feel, and then go from there. And then Dave, you have a wide list of strength movement demonstrations that you have on your YouTube channel. So mm-hmm. I shared with him the playlist that you have, and then I wanted to follow up with him, just get some feedback on the videos that I shared with him of you demonstrating the movements. And he actually thought they were very beneficial. He had suggested it would be helpful for him, for like one of us to actually go through that little 30-minute routine, which we actually kind of have some programs for that. We have our 30-30 club, where you have put together 30 days of strength movements, demonstrations, routines, mm-hmm. That I've also shared with him. And so, again, I think the main thing, the hardest thing with strength training virtually is you're not with the person. I was a personal trainer for 17 years. I like the one-on-one interaction in the weight room to make sure someone's doing the proper execution so they don't get hurt. Mm-hmm. When you're doing that virtually, it's a little bit different. So I always suggest that's worth the extra fee to go meet with someone once or twice to make sure you're doing everything correctly.
Speaking of correctly, he had a question about swim form and the techniques and drills that are necessary in the plan.
Yes. And I thought this was a great question because, again, within the plan, within the swimming details, I do offer specific drills like basic thumb slide drill, fingertip drag drill, fist, you know, basic drills that any swimmer, beginner or advanced, can benefit from. But the best way to actually know what is going to benefit you is to send me or someone else a swim video for analysis, Dave and I offer free swim analysis. And if you send me a video, I will do a voice analysis, and then Dave will edit my voice over your video with specific drills to work on your technique limiter. So you're not doing a drill, number one, that you don't understand, number two, that you're doing it wrong and it's not going to benefit you in any way. And then I also will share a video or two of me demonstrating the drills that I suggest for this person. And then we also have a variety of swimming programs with instructional drills within those programs that we offer on Training Peaks.
And you mentioned the Endurance Hour YouTube fitness channel. It was about 2 years ago that we had put on the channel a number of these 30-minute workouts, these 30 and 30 programs. So I made the introductions along with a whiteboard in the program. I think maybe in the description it might have a link to what those actually are. But if you can kind of see some of the demonstrations of certain workouts that are mentioned and referenced in our training plan. So a lot of it's deep on the Endurance Hour YouTube channel, mm-hmm. which is 2,000 plus videos strong. So it's in there. You got to do a little digging, but all of them are there, whether it's showing how to do jump squats, alternating jump lunges. I'm looking at some of them right now. We have a 30-minute tank top workout with the whiteboard shows everything we're doing, but in the little short clip, they're like 3 or 4 minute long, that I say, okay, here's what you do first, and here's what it looks like, and so on. Mm-hmm. So if you look at those, you can go, oh, that's what he's talking about. That's what it looks like when he's trying to do this little reaching and stepping and dumbbell raises and so on.
Yeah, and I share your videos a lot. I mean, you made a lot of these videos.
Yeah.
with you know, a lot of it was just kind of for fun, just to promote your channel and stuff. Yeah. But there's actually useful in the future. So I can say, oh, I know Dave has demonstrated this movement. I'm going to share your video versus a random YouTube video that I don't even know this person. So I know your videos. I know your form, execution, how you talk about it. I know it's very valid for a lot of athletes out there.
Yeah, I'm looking at some other ones that go, oh yeah, these are really good and helpful to understand how to do. What is a dumbbell sit-up? What is a Russian twist with a dumbbell?
Yeah.
Squats with heel raises, you know, all these different things, that bend over dumbbell rows and so on. It's just so much in there that I forgot that I did all those. That's pretty good. Moving on to the next question. I don't have the name on it, but this person lives in Tahoe and goes downhill and country skiing quite a bit on the weekends. They were wondering, would this take place on their scheduled bike and run for the weekends, or should they continue doing their bike and runs before or after their skiing? Because they're very much into skiing.
And that's a great question. Something I've always questioned myself when I lived in Colorado, and I would enjoy some outdoor snowy activities. You know, again, the question always depends on the person and what their current training volume is, and how long their training is telling them to bike and run on the weekend. And in my mind, I actually posted this question in the T2 Endurance group that we have on Facebook, because I wanted to get some of their responses. Is I personally, in the past, have replaced a run with a snowshoe when I lived in Colorado. And if I ever did any type of skiing, whether it was downhill, cross country, or skate skiing, I would replace a bike ride for the skiing activity. Now, in the base season and kind of your preseason, I would actually do a replace it. I wouldn't try to double up and try to fit it all in. Because if I'm going to go for a 2 or 3 hour ski, I don't want to come home and jump on my bike and do a 2 or 3 hour bike ride. I think it's pretty comparable muscular wise. You're getting the same benefit, which is endurance and strength. Now, if I was in my competitive phase of training, my build phase, where I had a race in 8 weeks, I would prioritize my bike and my run, and I would do that first. And then if I had energy and time, I would go and enjoy the outdoor ski or snowshoe activity. So it depends on your experience, and it also just depends on what phase of training you're in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I wouldn't. When I read that question, I'm going, never just skip or replace those, especially in the weekends when those are some of your bigger volume workouts, especially when it comes to bike and run. But to just to replace it. I said, I would think, no, don't ever replace it. You want to, if you want to keep on doing what you want to do, yeah, put that on before or after, but, and it depends on where you are in the workout plan, but gosh, you don't want to skip some of those bike and run workouts.
Right. And that leads to a good point. What's the purpose of the bike and run workouts? If it was like a big threshold or interval, high intensity run or bike, you'd still want to get that in. But if it was just like an endurance workout, I think replacing them would be fine.
Okay. Next question. I like this one here. I like them all, really. But this person went in for a bike fit, and the bike fitter was asking them about if they're going to be training in the arrow position. I'm a little kind of weird, odd on how the wording of this question is, but they're thinking that I don't need to give them the course that's not very hilly, and that most of our athletes don't train in the arrow position unless they're doing longer distances. So at what point do I decide to get a tri bike versus sticking with a regular road bike with or without arrow bars? Does it have to do with the distance, your experience, or what?
Right. Okay. So this person, she's a beginner athlete. She's doing her first triathlon this year. And she went for a road bike fit. And I suggested she bring her aero bars. She bought all of this from her neighbor friend. Mm-hmm. And I said, if you're going in for the fit, bring the aero bars. And apparently her bike fit person told her to ask me if she was going to be training in the aero bars. And I said, well, of course, if you're going to use the aero bars in your race, you need to train on them unless you're not comfortable, because there's an adjustment period. And the bike fitter told her, since it's a flat course, you don't need aero bars, which I would say no. And I told her, on a flat course, that's the best time to use aero bars.
Advantageous type of position to be in.
Right. And so I was kind of questioning this bike fit person. And so then we continued to talk. So then she decided, when they put the aero bars on her first ride, she wasn't comfortable, and her race is in like 6 weeks. So I said, that's fine. Your first race, you don't need to use aero bars, because I didn't. I did my first race on a mountain bike. It was interesting, my experience 30 years ago of racing on aero bars. But anyways, so let's answer the question of, when do you decide to get a tri bike versus a road bike? Based on my experience, I raced and trained on a road bike for 16 years before I had my first tri geometry style bike in 2009. And it was definitely some growing pains for me trying to adapt to triathlon geometry and feel like it was benefiting me, because I had this assumption that, ooh, I'm going to get a tri bike, I'm going to be faster, I'm going to run better. And my first year experience on that tri bike, I was not faster, and I did not run any better or any worse. And again, how well you run off the bike is so dependent on your training and your bike fitness and run fitness. It has nothing to me, in my mind, it has nothing to do with the bike. And so I think if you could only afford one bike, I would always recommend a road bike and adding some aero bars on it if you were going to do triathlon. I think a road bike is more versatile, and especially if you train in groups, or if you're commuting to work, or if you're just kind of riding around town, it's better to have the road bike than the tri bike. And ultimately, depending on how serious you are with triathlon, and if you feel like this is going to become a lifestyle where you're going to continue with the sport, definitely investing in a tri bike is worthwhile. And so it doesn't have to do with any distance, whether you're a sprint, super sprint, Ironman, or ultra Ironman triathlete. I think a triathlon bike is going to benefit you when you race as well as when you train. So it has nothing to do with the distance of the race. It just has to do with what you can afford and what your commitment to the sport is.
Yeah, I'm thinking, I know everyone starts off, you know, as based on economics sometimes, like, I'm just going to get what I can get, throw on aero bars or upgrade the wheels and other things. That if you want to, quote, race, yeah, then it's time to start getting serious and get into a tri bike because of the aero position. Because your fitness tells you, if I need to get faster and I'm already fit on a road bike, now I need to get aero. So let's get into a tri bike. So I think if you want to race, where time is a little more important, efficiency, then get a tri bike. But there's nothing wrong with you can still be efficient. You see them all the time, whether all distances. Crazy that you see someone in an Ironman with a road bike, but that's fine. It still works, and you can be comfortable in that position. It does take that getting used to leaning over and being, you know, with your elbows in the drops like that with the aero bars. It takes time to get used to that in your lower back and everything.
Right. 2002 Ironman. I think it was 2002 Ironman Lake Placid. There was a guy there with a banana seat, high handlebar bike. Oh. And he did it. He ended up finishing in like that 13 to 14 hour mark. So again, going back to what you said, you see all types of bikes, mostly this day and age, most of them are going to be expensive triathlon bikes with aero bars and aero wheels. And ultimately what's most important is comfort. Whatever you decide to use, be happy with it, be comfortable with it, and train on the bike that you plan on racing. You don't want to be training on a road bike and then go and race on a tri bike. I did. I did my first few years. I didn't actually race on a tri bike, but I would train on my road bike and then slap on some aero bars at 11 o'clock the night before a race. And it was always kind of a little bit of a disaster, but I adapted and I managed and I did just fine. But the stories I can share with you are pretty funny.
You know, one thing about a road bike, which I don't have one. I don't think I've had one it's been over a decade since I've had a road bike, is that how hilly is the course? How hilly is where you live? Because I have hills around with me, but I'm so used to being in a tri bike that I climb hills on my tri bike. It's not the best, but that's what I'm comfortable. That's what I'm used to. But if you know you're good at road bike and you're comfortable with it, it's going to be even easier to climb on a road bike than it is an aero bike, a tri bike. Right. So if you're already good with your road bike and you have a hilly course that you're going to be racing, have confidence that your road bike is going to do just fine, even better than some people who are in the aero position trying to climb, just comfort wise.
Exactly.
This one from Karen. Love this one. Karen says, I heard in the podcast that, quote, swimming is 100% form, unquote. I'm not sure I remember saying that, or you saying that. I doubt that, she says, because I've been doing drills suggested from a variety of coaching from clinics that I've attended and don't seem to be making any progress. Wow. What are your thoughts? Swimming is 100% form?
She heard it on another podcast, okay. Not our podcast.
Oh, no, a podcast. Got it.
A podcast. So what are my thoughts about this? Swimming definitely is very, very much more technique-oriented sport.
Yes.
But there is technique to biking and there is technique to running and there's technique to every sport you do. And so swimming just happens to be most triathletes' weaker length, and it usually has to do with their technique, and it usually has to do because they learn how to swim as an adult, or they haven't swam, you know, in 30 years and they're kind of relearning to swim as an adult, and technique has changed over the years. So if you're working still on your technique and you're not seeing progress, it could be because you're doing drills for the sake of doing drills and you're not doing drills based on your technique limiter and what's going to help you improve the most, number one. Number two, sometimes you have to build some fitness in the water, some conditioning in the water, in order for the specific drills to actually help you. Because if you're a very, very beginner and you haven't never really swam before and you're starting to do drills and you have no conditioning or comfort level or relaxation in the water, then you have to kind of start there. So when it comes to swimming more efficiently, faster technique, you have to still build the endurance. You have to build the strength. You have to build some higher intensity efforts like threshold efforts and speed efforts to improve in your swim. And I think what a lot of triathletes, multi-sport athletes are lacking is time in the water. There's no set reason you swim 1, 2, 3, or 4 days a week. You have to swim as many days of the week that your schedule allows. I believe swimming is frequently more important than how much distance you swim at any given time that you swim. I think you time in the water, because swimming muscles are only used when you are in the water. Your breathing technique in the water is different than your breathing technique on land. And then there's so many components of the freestyle stroke: breathing, body balance, rotation, kick, recovery, hand entry, underwater catch and pull. that the more frequently you're in the water, working on one or two things at any given time is going to help you. And if you are someone who's very much into the drills and technique, make sure you kind of master that one or two flaw that you have, because that's going to impact and carry over into the changes that you make before you move on to another drill or another technique focus. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're someone who has finally mastered the hand entry, that's going to impact greatly and positively on your underwater catch and pull. But if you start to work on the catch and the pull before you've mastered hand entry, you might never get it.
So they build upon each other. There's a kind of an order, isn't there?
Yes, yeah, exactly. There's an order.
Boy, I see some people in the pool and I go, I want to say something, but I don't know where they are in their swimming journey or what their fitness is. Did they ever deal with any injuries? But I see someone going and I see a flat hand or a palm entry or an over rotation, the legs dropping so much and then all this effort, and I go, oh my goodness, if you just look over, do you wonder why I'm swimming easier? You know, why am I going faster? I'm not a fast, fast swimmer, but I want to help. I want to give a couple of tips, but I'm not the kind, I don't want to be that guy who thinks they know it all or appears to like, hey, come over here, let me help you swim faster in 30 days, you know? But there's this, but you're right. I mean, if the hand entry is not there, the rest is kind of like, then it's pointless. Like, I need to do this first. They build. And is it wrong for me to think that swimming is 100% form? Is that wrong? Or is it 100% form? Is there other things in there? I mean, is it 98% form or is that correct?
No, I mean, you know, there's a lot of technique in, let's just talk about the freestyle stroke. There's a lot of technique involved. Mm-hmm. Once you have the technique, you have to put the time in the water. When you're putting the time in the water, you have to be, you know, very purposeful in the water. Mm-hmm. Are you working on endurance? Are you working on strength? Are you working on threshold speed? And not just swim continuously for the sake of swimming continuously, unless that's your goal. But for someone like Karen who posted the question, you know, make sure, again, I'd like to see a swim video for analysis, but make sure you first are reducing drag, because you're not going to increase propulsion if you still have body drag. And body drag has to do with breathing, body balance, rotation, and kick. That's all going to produce body drag. And then you work on the components of the freestyle stroke, you know, recovery, hand entry, underwater catch and pull. So, you know, make sure you're following that order and making sure you are putting time in the water and you're honest about yourself. I mean, I'll talk to people who are struggling with swimming and I'm like, well, when's the last time you swam? And they're like, you know, 6 months ago. And I'm like, okay, let's get you back in the water first.
Yeah.
And see where you're at.
Yeah, there's some of that muscle memory. Once, like you said about mastering one of them, once mm-hmm. you master that first one, then you don't think about that anymore. Then that's like taken care of. It's like automatic pilot. It's off. It's been checked off. Once you get to the water, like you already know how to do the hand entry. So the next phase is, all right, am I going to pull correctly? Maybe you got hand entry and pull done. All right, how about that follow through? Okay, maybe then you're working on those things. But I think mm-hmm. it's that muscle memory. I think about it in other sports that I do of like, I've got the first four steps done because I've done it so many times, or I'm not just mindset, automatic pilot. This is what I've done. This is my repeatable routine. Now here I'm kind of fine tuning these other aspects of it. And that could be, let me make sure my hips are staying up. Let me make sure my thumb is flicking through my hip. So I have a full follow through. So I get that full mm-hmm. range. And then there's that breathing. Do I want to go every other? Do I want to go every four strokes? What is, am I work on sighting? You know, do I want to work on going straight? There's all these little things. I don't know. I don't think anything's 100% because there's other factors that could be like, you know, like, I don't know, just your effort in general. Maybe I'm going out there just for the cardio aspect of it. Not uh-huh. so interested in the form because a lot of it's already done. It's already in my bag of experience.
Right. And I want to make one more comment about, she's gone to other camps and had different coaches talk about her stroke and give her tips. Mm-hmm. That could be good or bad. That could be good in the sense that a lot of times coaches will say the same thing in a different way, and that could help an athlete click. You know, like I'm talking about high elbow recovery different than you would be talking about high elbow recovery but they understand what you're talking about before, but I said the same thing, but they understand your wording about it,
sure.
which would be a good thing.
Yep.
It could be detrimental because a lot of us coaches also teach different techniques. I teach pulling down the center of your body between your belly button and hip. Other coaches teach pulling wide and pulling outside your body line. Some coaches teach, like myself, I'll teach follow through, making sure you're touching, you're scraping your thigh and you're extending your arm all the way behind you. Mm-hmm. Some coaches still teach extension in front of you and not to fully extend behind you. And so when you're getting all this conflicting advice, no wonder you're confused and you're not going to make progress because you have, you know, four coaches telling you really different ways to swim. And then you just don't know what to do. And you're practicing too many of the wrong things.
That I hope this is not going to be going down a weird rabbit hole here, but you know, I know you have a deeper hand entry and I like your technique because you know, I just like it. It's better for me. Mm-hmm. An earlier hand entry and deeper versus out in front of you. But then you talk about a longer follow through with the hand. Do you think the distance from the hand entry to the complete follow through is a set distance when someone, the other coach will go, let me start further out, and but I'm pulling up shorter. Maybe that distance is the same. Let's say it's, I don't need this right number, 3 feet. No matter what, from the time you enter to the time you stop is a 3 feet to foot, 3 foot distance. Could it be the same, but someone starts out further and then stops earlier?
It could be the same, but I don't think that matters because okay. the reason, so there's two ways to teach. There's a vertical forearm. There's a, and I actually do a few videos on the Endurance Hour channel talking about just specifically about early vertical forearm and deep vertical forearm.
Okay.
Where you enter and how deep you enter, a lot of it has to do with, you know, whether you're a youth swimmer or an adult swimmer and your shoulder mobility and thoracic spine mobility and just a kind of upper body in general. A lot of times adults don't have that flexibility to reach and catch and pull deep and they drop their elbow. Mm. So a lot of adults that I see will reach, flatten their hand, a flat entry, and then their elbow's dropped. And mm-hmm. that's the problem.
Mm.
Not the distance that they're pulling. It's the problem of okay. the dropped elbow. Whereas youth swimmers have a little bit more flexibility and mobility that I actually will teach them to put their hand in the water and pull straight back. So their elbow is a little bit higher on the surface of the water compared to an adult where their elbow is a lot further below. Either way, they're both vertical forearms. It's okay. just a little bit different place of where they're entering. And I just find that a lot of adults don't have that mobility to catch shallow and pull and follow through like they're supposed to.
Okay. Okay.
But that's a good question about the distance. I'll have to think about that some more.
Hmm. Last but not least, we'll wrap this up here. And this is a general question. What is the biggest racing mistake that you've made that has set you up for success? So I guess it's something you've learned through your training that's now you are better because you've learned from this mistake.
That's a good question. And it's actually one I posted on our T2 Endurance Facebook group. And I wanted to get some people's answers on that. But let me talk about my own experience. I think in the beginning, you know, I would, you know, be training on a certain bike and then maybe I'd borrow someone's bike to race on, or I'd put some aero bars on the night before mm-hmm. or get some clipless pedals the day before. That actually happened. And I didn't know how to clip in and clip out. And I would have been better off just wearing my running shoes and normal pedals. And I put on aero bars the night before, and the aero bars have actually come apart. I didn't bolt them down enough. And so all of a sudden, I'm putting a lot of effort and energy just trying to hold the aero bars on the bike. And so I don't do that anymore. And what I've learned from it, and it's helped me with success as a coach, is I can share these experiences with other athletes so they don't do the same things I did. A lot of athletes have commented in our group, it has to do with nutrition. And what I've, again, something that I've done is not eating enough or not drinking enough. And really, and it was due to my early years as a triathlete, I didn't know. There wasn't all the education and all the information out like there is today that I just didn't know. I just had to learn by doing. I would go on, you know, 2-3 hour bike rides and never drink and always come back exhausted and feel like I was bonking. And it was just a matter of dehydration. So what I've learned from that is I used to set my watch to beep at me every 15 minutes. So it would remind myself to drink. Mm-hmm. And then drinking just became automatic. I didn't need those reminders. So I was able to race better because I was able to hydrate and fuel myself properly when it came to racing. So are those big mistakes? Those are great mistakes to make because they've helped me implement better strategies and preparation as I move on to continuing on with my racing success. How about you?
I think nutrition is something everyone figures out, you know, pretty quickly when they go longer distances. They're like, that's like an early quick one. But the things that I think for me that I've constantly had to work around, and that maybe it's my ego, maybe it's just the energy of the race. It's the pacing of my pacing to set myself up for a successful run. It's never the swim that's an issue. Just because I have a set speed basically, but it is the bike effort that I've had to figure out and sometimes hold back on and, keep my ego in check of other people who are passing me, or if I want to, you know, climb a hill, I need to back it off and trust the training and say, this is what I can do right now. Don't let other people influence my pacing. So that's an area that I think has helped me be more successful is the patience in the pacing. Specifically on the bike, because if that bike is not done correctly, the run is gone. The run is a waste. It's like, there's nothing I can really gain from this run that, in terms of data, because I screwed up the bike. And I do that every once in a while. Since I haven't raced, you know, really anything seriously in the last couple of years, I haven't had to experience that. The only races I've done have been Olympic or sprint lately, so it doesn't matter. But if it goes to Olympic and I don't do the bike pacing correctly, then the run shot. So I think my pacing is with my biggest lesson or mistakes that I've made in the past that have determined my success in the overall outcome.
Yeah. And I'm finding that out with ultra running is pacing and nutrition is everything. And I've learning from each ultra run I've done that my pacing and my nutrition has improved because I've had success. And the way I measure success is my ability to continue running the second half of the ultra and to feel good when I finish and not have completely trashed quads and not feel like I can't move the last, 5 to 10 miles of the race. I know my nutrition and my pacing was spot on. And so I just briefly looked at the answers in our T2 endurance group, and everyone's saying the same thing. They're all chatting about pacing and nutrition.
Yeah.
And so I think that's still an ongoing learning process because every experience is going to be different. The weather is going to bring an experience, the venue, the terrain, your mental and physical preparation. So it's all about just preparing your body. And I like to tell athletes, race it like you trained it.
Yeah.
Take all that information you just gathered out of the weeks and months and years of training you've done and all those experiences you've had and learn from them and do what's working and don't do what didn't work, and you'll have success. I think failures and mistakes lead to the successes I've had in my sport.
Don't show up on race day and then think of what you're going to do. Know what you're doing before you even arrive, have that plan. People do it all the time. They put, the sticky notes or some sort of markings on, I would write on my arm. Here's my goal. I'm going for this, this pace. Because this is what I know I can do. So know what you're doing before you get there. Uh-huh. Don't make it up on the fly. Here's the first 20 miles of the bike ride felt pretty good. Let me see if I can pick it up a little bit. No. Know what you're doing before you arrive on race day and what is realistic. Like you said, race it like you train it. If you know you can only go, your best is a 9-minute pace in the run. Don't look to go 8:45s because you haven't done it. So know ahead of time what you can do.
And on that note, make sure it changes every year. Train and race within your fitness level. Mm-hmm. I've had my years where I'm like, 5 years ago, I could do a 7-minute pace. That doesn't mean I can do it 5 years later. And so being honest and realistic and staying within your current fitness and your current experience goes so far into longevity in the sport.
Well, for that, Wendy, happy 10-year anniversary. And also, to our first original co-host, Roger Thompson, who may or may not be listening, who kicked off the podcast with me 10 years ago. I can't thank him enough. I'm surprised I didn't say anything about it initially, but Roger was instrumental in getting the podcast off the ground 10 years ago this month. Wendy Mader, thanks so much. I'm Dave Erickson. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great week of training, racing, or recovery. We'll see you back here next time for episode 346 next time. Adios.
Adios.